Hey, friends. David Mullins, Robin Black, another episode of Mentality of Combat Sports. Thanks for joining us. David Mullins, sportspsychology.com, and he's David Mullins MMA on Twitter. I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. Thanks for all your comments and emails and tweets and whatever, snaps. And are you on Snapchat?
No.
No, you probably shouldn't be.
No.
That's 12 seconds of crazy. speaking of crazy, what are we going to talk about today? I know before we came in and sat down, you were referencing emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is something we've touched on before. Just quickly, what's the difference between intelligence and emotional intelligence?
Yeah, so that IQ kind of thing is what traditionally people are measured on. It's just how intelligent they are. And it's kind of a fixed thing.
Intelligence quotient.
Yeah,
IQ.
So back, I think it was in the 70s, 80s, maybe a bit later, they started to look at emotions in that way, as in people are... Some people are more intelligent with how they handle their emotions, how they manage them, how they deal with other people. So this idea of EQ came up.
Emotional quotient.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. It's something I've been trying to learn about and improve in myself. There was a time, I'll just use my own example. Anyone would have their own hundreds. But there was a time where something on Twitter could actually make me very angry, and very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of people are in that state right now. And then you just, well, and then you, I, well, look what he said.
Yeah.
As if somehow that is the explanation. But the explanation is really how you reacted to a series
of... And the emotion
of,
that was bringing up was anger
and
frustration and you know, all these different kinds of disgust or whatever it would be that would be brought up.
Sometimes you feel humiliated or you feel embarrassed or you feel threatened and it creates a certain emotion and you act a certain way.
Yeah.
So we can train that though. This is like getting a bigger muscle or getting better at throwing a kick. You can train your emotions.
Exactly. Like it's good first to know what emotions are. That's like that's a good first step towards training what they are. So there's like they have to have three different things. For emotions have three different things. Like they have a subjective experience. So you feel something personal to you, and like your version of anger would be different to my version of anger. So that
do you get angry?
Oh, yeah. I've got a hell of a temper.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're Irish.
Yeah, yeah.
And a ginger.
Yeah, I've got a hell of a temper. Yeah. Only certain things will bring it out, though. Yeah. But when it comes out, oh, man.
But 22-year-old you and you now, 22-year-old you would have it brought out a lot faster and a lot easier.
Yeah. 22-year-old me would get, like, you know, you get sent off in games and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's all gone now.
Yeah. So it's an experience that's personal to you.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So you have
subjective.
Your own subjective experience to you. Then there's also a physiological response to it. Yeah. Exactly. Or if it's happiness, you know, there's joy and if there's sadness. Some people cry more than others, and you know, it's personal, but there's a physiological response, and then there's also a behavioral response. So you'll act out afterwards, even if that involves not doing anything. You know, that's still a behavioral response to the emotion you're feeling. If you just sit there quietly and just stew with it, you're still having a response.
Yeah, that's really interesting because all that makes sense. You know, when you say to somebody, well, you know, if you fight with your wife or your girlfriend and you go to therapy, they'll say, you know, you need to, if she does something, it's how you respond which causes her something which will respond. You'll see that on TV. You'll read that. You've heard anyone you know that's been to any type of therapy would see that. But that all sounds very nebulous. But when you identify three things that actually
have an emotion, that's what emotions are made up of. Yeah.
Then yeah, that's interesting.
You get to really see what it is. And then if you bring in thoughts into it, like where
a narrative.
Yeah, so you would have been thinking a certain way. You read that tweet that someone sends you, and you think about it a certain way, which brings up the emotion. And then you think about the reaction afterwards a certain way, and it's a cycle. Mm-hmm. It's a cycle that continues and continues and continues.
But I would have that response, I would say, one out of thousands of times now. I would also be able to recognize that if I was really tired – that likelihood could be up or other scenarios. But for the most part, over time, if you're moving your life in the right direction in the way you see things, you should have less one in thousands, almost never. You think it's never and it's been 3 years and then you still get angry one time. Like it's not that you're trying to not have emotion. You're just trying to know what they are and identify
them. Yeah, you become more self-aware. We'll get into that in a bit.
Because this will relate to fighting. Yeah, I assure you, this will relate to fighting.
Yeah. So that's what they're made up of. We all know types of emotions like anger, fear, disgust, sadness, happiness, all the different kinds of things that we feel. So that's what they are. But fighters feel this stuff in the build-up to fights. You know, there's a lot of emotions in the build-up to fights where someone's talking shit about you in the build-up, or this is a big fight and it brings up certain emotions.
Or fear.
Or there's a threat because of the opponent and how you perceive them.
Yeah.
All of this stuff is not so much the threat is that you perceive in the threat. So it doesn't even need to be real. It's just if you perceive it, then it is real. Then it's going to bring up certain emotions from you. Yeah, so fighters have to deal with managing these emotions, you know, all the time in their fights and the build-up to these fights. It's a big thing that I work on is picking up cues from them, picking up the way they're talking about certain things and the way they're describing certain things and the reactions is, you know, what's the emotions that are here? What's the knock-on effect of these feel like? Emotions are kind of quick, short-lived kind of feelings, but they can have impact long-term in what they do with the thoughts that come afterwards or the mood that comes afterwards. So
we want to address them in the micro. This is what's happening. This is how you feel. We need to deal with it. But I think we also want to address your ability to deal with it.
Yeah.
Your belt level at being somebody who deals with emotions. If you're a white belt at emotions, you don't have any control. Everything is just whatever happens,
nonstop.
You're on the wave of whatever happens.
Just react all the time. Fly off the handle at everything.
Or be happy at things and cry and up and just up and down and up and down.
Yeah, and that's not ideal at all. So you can improve with this, like you said, like anything. You have an emotional intelligence level, but everyone can be working on it. The biggest thing is to have self-awareness first off of, you know, I'm thinking this way because I reacted to that in that way, and I had this emotion afterwards. It's not that you suppress the emotions, it's that you become a bit more aware of you know, the emotions that you feel around certain things. And the thoughts you have afterwards and the behaviors you have afterwards, and you start to kind of step in and do something about it instead of just...
Well, recognize that it is something first. Before you can even step in, you have to be able to go, oh, look, that's a purple-colored emotion. There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Because if we can't even identify it or even identify that you have some control over it, I think that's the first step. So identifying this is not some random thing that you're at the mercy of.
Yeah, and understanding that... The thoughts you might have been having led to the emotions and then new thoughts that might be – and are they useful or not? Mm-hmm. Is this helping you in like for fighters, is this helping your performance or not? Or are you actually getting in your own way a little bit here? So it's one of the big things I have to manage in the build-up to fights and making sure the fighters are aware of going into the fight as well so that you want to be going in there not emotionless but with useful emotions and ready to go in and perform. Focus switched on, ready to go and perform like we talk about all the time.
And what will be some useful emotions? I mean, and it may not even be the individual emotion. Like being really scared is bad, but being a little scared is okay.
Being a little scared is a good thing. A little bit of fear once it's in the right place and you kind of, you know, it can be a bit motivating.
Mm-hmm.
And anger can be motivating. Yeah. It tends to bring you towards the thing that caused you to be angry.
If you are in control of it, if it's a small amount that you are allowing, that you are choosing to have.
Early on in the camp, it tends to be useful. But as the fight gets closer, it gets less and less useful, and it actually becomes detrimental. And as the fight gets, if you're right there and you're still feeling that stuff, you know, it's gone too far. It served its purpose ages ago in terms of motivating you to get up for this fight and train and get focused. But if you're carrying anger into performance, you know, your breathing is off. Your blood pressure, your heart rate's off. Your muscles are tense. Your concentration's not quite there. So it's not a useful thing to be feeling in competition.
It's so interesting when over time, when you see at different levels certain things that some people would think and say, "Okay, this is the situation I have to fight," and they'll look for their own answer.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever heard this early on? It's like, "I'm just going to pretend that guy kicked my dog." Or he hit my girlfriend. And that's – you're in search of answers on your own, and that would be one that some people look for. But
still done at high-level sports.
Really?
I mean, I see it all the time with coaches, like you say, NFL teams.
These motherfuckers.
They're looking for, bulletin board kind of material. They said this about you guys.
Yeah.
They disrespected you here, and then they're trying to get you motivated.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not the right way about yeah. going about
it. So
you want to be free from that stuff coming into performance. You want to just be performing. Like we always talk about with flow and that kind of stuff, that's going to get in the way of any kind of flow state you can get into. So, but to be able to do that, you have to have been able to recognize these emotions that are coming up and how you're dealing with them, kind of redirect them a little bit or change the patterns that you tend to do, and start to bring in some useful reactions to it and leave the negative behind and bring in a positive response.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we've got some footage that Chase has over there.
Yeah.
And there's a fighter or two in particular you want to look at. I know Ronda was a topic that we had.
Right? Yeah, Ronda, I mean, Ronda's one of those fighters that people would think of as an emotional fighter. Mm-hmm. You know, and she is. Like, we've seen it from her loads of times. She's one of those kinds of fighters that has high emotional reactions, mm-hmm. even post-fight. And we look at some of that stuff. But what people would think of her as being, like, she's angry sometimes and mm-hmm. she's so intense and she carries a lot of that emotion in with her. When I'm looking at her past fights in the UFC, I found, this is just my opinion, but when I look at it, I think her best performances are when she's free from that mm-hmm. kind of emotion and she's just performing. She's still got that intensity and that focus and she's switched on, but she's not highly emotional, highly charged, angry, fearful, whatever you want to call it. She's not that. She's more just performing. Intense, yeah. but still just free and able to perform.
When I think of her best ones, I think of, and I haven't even looked at the footage much that you have here and what we're going to look at with it. But when I think just of being very familiar with her body of work, the Kat Zingano one.
Yeah.
And I think about Alex Davis.
Yeah.
And I think of Sarah McMahon.
Yeah.
And there's a
number. Those are the three we have.
Really? Yeah. Those are her best. There's no doubt about it. I wonder. And I wonder if she will recognize that, if she will separate them. So those are the three we have. Tell me about what we're going to
look
at.
Yeah, so if we're going to look at these.
I didn't. Well, those are her three. And I feel something. When I watch them, I feel something different with her. That was the pocket.
Yeah.
She had found that pocket.
Yeah.
Through whatever route. We know that, you know, I don't know how much mental strategy or training she has or purposeful development. We have seen some possible, you know, implied weakness in some of the coaching that she's had, but, you know, we're not there. But that pocket was undeniable.
Yeah, and I think that there wasn't that emotion around these fights. These were just opponents. There was nothing personal
mm-hmm,
about these
that's
ones.
True.
She was, you know, it's a little different. We'll get into the other ones after. But mm-hmm. If we just look at the Sarah McMahon one first off.
Okay, and we're not looking at the fight. We're just looking at for her emotion in the particular
yeah, just
part.
Just at the stare down part.
Okay,
so they walk out to meet each other.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's an intensity and a focus there that undeniable.
Like
that's
angry,
that's the Ronda intensity, and she touches glove and
she gets
ready
to work.
To go. She's switched on. She's ready to go.
And just pause. Oh yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Chase.
We'll see that this is, man. This is quick.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see how workmanlike that is. It's what she's got. She's just doing the work.
Yeah. She gets this. It's a knee that finishes it, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the body.
Yeah. Ribs or sternum.
Yeah.
And just commits. Yeah. Oh yeah. Actually, it was to the liver.
And the fight's over, and it was quick. We see all the emotion afterwards and the joy and everything like that, but it'll become more obvious as we watch these other fights what stood out from that one for me.
Yeah.
So we can even go straight into the Alexis Davis one because, again, same face, same intensity, same switched
focus.
On focus.
Yeah.
She's ready to go to compete, glove touch, back she goes, switched on.
And just goes into work.
And
you can feel it.
She's in flow here.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. Watch.
Yeah, really unbelievable.
This is an amazing finish.
It really is unreal.
She's just performing. She's just feeling that. You can't do that if you're not, you know, if you're not feeling it and in that flow. Again, you know, Alexis doesn't really know where she's at right now.
No.
And Ronda's, again, you can see that joy. She's controlled after the fight. She's free from, you know, that serious kind of emotional action that we'll see in some of the other fights.
Let's see the third one.
Yeah, the Kat Zingano fight.
This really was the era where she was truly performing at a special level.
Same intensity, same focus. She's intense. She's ready to go.
Yeah.
Touch gloves.
Yeah.
And
it's the same thing back. Almost the same motion. She's going through.
Yeah.
And then the overreaction by Zingano, hyper-focused here.
Yeah, we talked last week about Kat being like in that fight-or-flight mode, but Ronda is in a flow state completely and free from the emotion, gets the finish. She's got that joy and she's got that happiness and you know, she's proud of her performance.
It's a very, very strange thing when you feel those in retrospect. There's something, you know, there's a certainty. Like, what I need to do is exactly what I've come here to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
That intensity that people associate with her, it's there.
Yeah.
But it's not with the anger. It's not with the useless emotions and that overcharged aspect that we'll see in some of the other performances next.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's watch the first one.
Okay.
And then we can discuss what maybe one of the differences is.
So we have three of her fights that we don't believe she performed as well. Now, you win some.
She won two of the three.
Yeah, right.
So this will be Misha. So Misha Tate, the rematch in the UFC. And there's a lot of bad blood between these two going in.
Yeah, you can see it.
There's a lot of bad blood. There's a lot of intensity. Yeah. This is after the Ultimate Fighter, and they've already fought. No glove touch.
Yeah, right.
Which is, to me, a key point.
Yeah.
We'll get to see some of the fight play out. It was a better fight. I watched it back for this, and it's a better fight than I even remembered.
Yeah.
Misha had big moments as well.
She really did. Yeah, she really did. She had a great fight. And Ronda here, you feel she's like trying to get to her, you know, like she's going after her. And sometimes
this is not to downplay Misha, because Misha and Holly were probably the two best fighters she had fought maybe
ever.
But it was a back and forth fight, and it was a real struggle. It got into the third round eventually, and it had been the toughest fight she'd had in her career up to that point.
Now, she settled in better and better as the fight went, which is something we touched on last week too. Whether in this case we were talking about emotion, last week we were talking about sort of how lit up you are and fight or flight. But later on, you can ease back into it. And then Ronda got better as the fight went on.
Misha had her moments in the fight, and she had her hurt a few times, landed some big stuff. Maybe this is the key to the fight, was that, the judo that Ronda was able to use on Misha. But it was it was a tough fight. And the key point, and the thing that I've noticed compared to the other three, is the no glove touch.
Right.
And it's not that there's no glove touch. It's the emotion underneath the no glove touch.
Right.
There's still a lot of emotion. There's still a lot of anger there and frustration and all these negative stuff that she's carried into the cage with her in these performances.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a really interesting kind of aspect to it. But you know, this fight, she did get better. But Misha, what you noticed at the beginning, although, you know, you're going to touch if there's two of you, so one of you can't touch a person's glove without the other. But Misha, in this fight, started very, very focused, you know. And so she had almost a better start than Ronda did.
Yeah, and you can see Ronda's really tired at the end of round two. You know, like she hadn't been into the third round before.
Yeah, ever.
So she's tired there. She's feeling it big time.
But she's focused.
Like, she's ready to go, and she gets the finish quickly in the next round. This is the finish where she gets the armbar.
Because she's done that. That role there is really pretty amazing. You have to be aware and skilled enough to just know where that arm is and that leg comes over. That's not a typical choice that people make in there. But but even you saw how tired, and that is a beautiful finish.
Yeah.
And she won the fight, regardless.
Yeah.
So this fight in and of itself, standing alone, would be, you know, you wouldn't learn a ton from it.
No, it's still a good performance. Misha Tate's a high-level fighter. It's not to say it's not a good performance, but maybe it's not as good as she was maybe capable of.
Yeah.
You know, if you're aiming as a fighter to learn and grow from every fight, win or lose, then maybe there's things you can take from wins like that and thinking, I was a little bit too emotionally charged there. Need to work on that. And I don't need to carry that anger in, because you can see after the fight the reaction that you know, she's still pissed off with Misha.
Right.
She's still angry with Misha. There's no shaking hands. She's still feeling that even after she wins. Misha wants to shake her hand, and there's no chance. She's not having it.
So now, what then? The other sort of bad performances. And I thought the Betch-Cohea fight was a terrible performance.
Yeah.
It's great if you win in the first round, you knock somebody out. But when you got your face beat up and, you know, on some level you did it because you're like, well, I don't believe that this, you know, she was a soccer mom 2 years earlier or just didn't even fight a couple of years ago. I've been a competitive martial artist since I was 5 years old and 3 years old and my mother was throwing me. I can just walk through it. She was right, but that's still a terrible performance. But
yeah.
So what these are going to have in common, there are no glove touches.
Yeah.
But you're not saying not touching gloves
she
means...
You can't just fake touching gloves. It's not superstitious or it's not like, oh, that's the reason she didn't win. To me, it's a clue into the mindset.
Yeah.
And it's a look in. It's a little doorway into what she's thinking there. And there's, to me, too much of the negative anger kind of emotion being carried in. Because if you think of the Betch-Cohea build-up, It got pretty personal because Betch made a comment about suicide and Ronda took that super
Which
personal
is,
and rightly so, I suppose.
It's hard not to.
Yeah, and there'd been a lot of shit talk and, you know, she's fighting in Brazil and everything like that. So it's understandable that there would have been that emotion. It's not to say you can't have that reaction. You should have that reaction. But then you think about it and you talk it through and you figure it out and you take what's useful from it and you leave what's not. But then you become free of it come fight time, you know, instead of letting that just, you know, bubble and bubble and then it gets to the boil come fight time. Because, like you said, it's a really, really quick finish.
Yeah. So,
but it's not a good performance.
The reason I mentioned it's not – the glove touch happens to be an incidental nature of what we're looking at or a symptom.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because I don't want people to look and go, oh, my God, they didn't touch gloves. That means someone's going to have a bad performance.
No,
that's
it's not that
case.
At all.
This
is just unique to Ronda because I've just looked at her and looking back on her fights because she's obviously fighting soon.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that some guy who doesn't touch gloves doesn't.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with them personally.
Or sometimes does or sometimes doesn't. I mean, it may not be reflective of anything. But in this case, we're seeing her bad performance.
This is a theory I'm putting forward.
Yes.
What I've observed.
And educated observations of mannerisms that indicate some level of emotion.
Yeah.
The glove touch happens to be one of the things that these have in common. But also, if you look back and you do watch those three, you get the feeling of that same person in their best state. And you watch these three, and that's not the same person.
Yeah.
So let's see the second one.
Subtle difference. This is the Betch-Cohea one next.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, very personal in the build-up. She's got that same intensity and that same focus that she always does. But there's no touch of gloves. I feel like she's carried a little bit too much of that emotion in with her.
And she
fights like that.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just going to smash my way through this.
And if you imagine her fighting like this against Holly, it's over real quick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is not how you fight this fight. And she's a brilliant judo player who rips people's arms off. And here she's fighting somebody who's on a much lower level as an athlete and fighting them in a way that allows them the highest chance of beating
Exactly. She's given her a chance she hasn't earned the right to have.
Yeah.
And it works out because of this shot here. And
Behind it's all over. Yeah.
But that shouldn't mask the performance. The result should never mask the performance. There has to be lessons. You can see the emotion afterwards. It's still there. She's still carrying some of that stuff
after the fight. You see the other three, it's sort of like a celebration of having performed the way that I wanted. There, now she's smiling.
Yeah.
But she's angry. There's a million reasons. We'll zero in on Betch-Cohea herself, but there's a certain amount of anger at much else that's going on in the world around her. And that's stuff we can manage as well.
Yeah.
If you're somebody who's like, you know, whether you're Ronda Rousey or Justin Bieber, there was a cascade of hate and pain and nastiness, and that is coming your way, regardless of how or why or your role in it, it's coming in there. And we need to be able to address your ability to handle that emotionally.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that then doesn't lead on to the way you're thinking about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you overreact to someone saying something or, you take something personal. That, like the Betch-Cohea stuff was pretty personal, so it's hard not to take that stuff. But you want to be able to get to the point as an athlete that you can leave that behind come performance time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to help you carrying it in. But like you're talking about, the emotion and the pressure on her at this point was huge. Now, she was, you know, at the height of her powers and the demands on her and all the different stuff she's having to do. There's a lot going on, so you need to be able to, you know, work through that emotionally as well and the way you're thinking about all this stuff.
In the world of fighting, Mayweather is the has probably the, you know, Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, some of these people have had the most intense ever sort of burn in the world of fighting. But when they lived in a time, they didn't have all of the media and yeah. all of the speed and intensity of these things. You know, there was no Facebook.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali didn't get exposed to those things. When he was at home alone, he was at home alone. When he was with his family, he was with his family. Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey are the big ones now in a time where there are a million variables that affect your mind and your emotion.
Yeah.
And so some of those – because McGregor just had the best – one of the best performances of his life. He's under – even more pressure and even more eyes and spotlight, and he raises the pressure himself, and yet he's able to go in and perform that way. Again, other than maybe the first Nate Diaz fight.
Yeah, but and maybe he wasn't mentally prepared for that in terms of what the challenge was and being ready to go for it, but learned from it and was ready to come out second time. And we see him angry.
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely
throwing
angry.
That's an angry, out of control,
emotional response there. But we also see him able to let go of that come fight time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big difference, and that's a big key.
Demetrius Johnson, we'll talk about him after we talk about all this stuff. But you imagine the difference between Ronda or Conor and Demetrius as far as what they have to deal with, the types of different extra variables and pressures and things they can't control and emotion and intensity. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
But Demetrius is the best fighter in the world. We'll talk about him more and after. But there's a third one.
Yeah, right, so this is the one that everyone would expect is the Holly Holm fight.
Yeah, which was also a bad performance.
Yeah, and if we just pause it, Chase, for a sec, because if we go back to the weigh-ins the night before,
remember how crazy that was? That's when I said she was going to lose the fight.
Yeah.
Now, that you can still be wrong, because the next day people can adjust, refocus, and move on. But that, to me, was the sign of somebody who had kind of lost control of themselves, where they wanted to be.
And there was no hatred in the build-up. There was no trash talk. Holly is super respectful. She's not going to do any of that stuff. So the personal kind of grudge match going in with the Misha one is a little bit more understandable, as is the Bechkohea one. But Holly came out of nowhere. It didn't feel like it was real, and she's calling her a fake preacher's daughter and all this kind of stuff. It was like, where's this coming from?
Yeah.
Holly's been nothing but respectful, and it's really just athletics and competition.
Right.
It's not a personal fight. So that, to me, was bringing up a little bit of, you know, there's some fear maybe appearing and being unleashed, and it hadn't been dealt with. And whether that's based around the way the training had been going, whether that's based around knowing the skill set Holly had and how it matched up and it hadn't been kind of dealt with in training camp.
Not dealing with any of the other million variables in your own life and your own mind going into it. But to lose control at a weigh-ins, you're right. If there was an emotional weigh-ins because somebody had said things about your mother all week, or somebody had said they were going to do horrible things to you, or it was personal, it would be less of a shock than when somebody just comes in and doesn't seem to have control of their emotions.
Yeah.
There's also times where people surprise their opponent by being intense, maybe as a tool, but that wasn't the case.
It wasn't even that. No, it was a build-up and build-up. I'm guessing over the course of the camp, and it just got unleashed. Yeah. And it wasn't really thought out. It was just an emotional response. That's the thing.
I think it was my fault. I think, and not just me, 10 others, but there were people who said, this is how she can win. And when they said, this is how she can win, she can strike out to distance and throw her kicks. And then Ronda was on a talk show and she said, I know what she's going to try to do. She's going to strike back out to distance and try to kick me in the head. That might have been a sign that was – it's great to tell Jimmy Fallon, but maybe you should talk about that. Maybe you should plan for that. Maybe you should deal with the realities of that, because it turned out that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's my fault.
But she made it personal with Holly then. You know, she didn't – that was her go-to kind of emotional response, is to make it personal now and try and get herself up for it and go back to her default way.
Right. Now, before we look at that one – there are people who make it personal and it works for them. The Diaz brothers, every fight's personal. How dare you sign a contract to fight me? Now you're dead.
Yeah.
You're my enemy. They do that.
Yeah, but I still think they're emotionally controlled come fight time.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Even with all the shit,
right.
and they're doing all this stuff. Even you know,
they're
still in control. Yeah. They're still doing their performance. It's part of their performance, but they're still just. I don't feel like they're carrying that emotion in.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Even like all of that kind of stuff, it's a tone, it's an expression, but it's not, they are in control.
Yeah, they are
in control, that is for sure.
Yeah, it's not an emotional response where you haven't really stepped in and done anything. It's not just a natural instinctive response.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more thought out than that. It's how they want to perform.
Yeah, those guys are so cool. Okay, so Holly Holm.
Yeah.
And this is her, the last time we've seen her. And again,
same intensity, same focus. Again,
somebody breathing a little hard.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the glove touch, and that's even more obvious because Holly puts her hands up to do it, and there's none of that.
And then this is the game. This is what you know. Going in, you strike at distance to move away, and strike moving away until you get the chance to line up a kick. But Rhonda knew that was coming in, and you know, not being that she wasn't given any answers, and that's a really unfortunate thing. You know, when you are like, "This is what I need to do. This is what she's going to try to do," you don't actually have tactical answers for that. It must be a terrible place to be. This must be a horrible, scary, lonely place to be in here, like this.
And as you're tense already with the kind of anger you're feeling, and your breathing's off, and then the performance starts to go like this, and Holly's performing so well, and makes it even worse, and it just causes a spiral. Like Holly was at this game, this distance, Holly beats her all day.
Yeah, it beats almost everybody.
Yeah,
Shevchenko actually. That's a different story. But Holly had a bad. She felt she didn't perform properly, which is very interesting. And there it is. And that's you know, if she could go in and have the ability to identify the difference between, and it's not just whether you touch gloves or not, or whether you're angry or not. There's a million things leading up to it.
Yeah.
But to be able to have the self-awareness to walk away and go, there was a time, a pocket, where I was on top of everything. And identify what it was, what you were doing, what's different between then and this, you know?
Yeah. And a big thing is how you perceive fights coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, you can perceive them as a threat or as a challenge. And there's a big difference then. You know, you're excited to get to work and figure out, like the way you talked about Tyron Woodley getting ready for Wonder Boy. Yeah. That whole team were excited about dealing with that challenge that Wonder Boy brought and getting to work and working on with those different sparring partners they brought in and like bringing in Raymond Daniels and those kind of guys to mimic him. Figuring out the style and what happens. I know Connor and John got excited about figuring out how to deal with Nate for the second fight because they saw it as a challenge now. Okay, here's this challenge. Let's go, you know, what can we do? What's our part in this? How can we game plan? What skill sets do I need to bring in to be able to perform? But if you see it as a threat, you're much less likely to, and there's some fear there, some anger there, there's all these different emotions. You're much less likely to do the work that's going to get you to be able to deal with it.
Rhonda, the feeling you get from those three, the good three, the top three, the pinnacle, is that, cool, I finally get another chance to go out. Finally being 3 months or finally being 6 months or whatever it is, I finally get a chance to go out and do that thing that I'm great at, that I work hard at, that I get to show people.
Yeah.
It's this chance. Finally I get it. I won't get to do it again for a while, so I can't I can't wait till Saturday when I do it. And some of the other ones, it's something I've got to do. I have to defend my belt. I've got to make the money, or you know, I got to show this woman what's up or whatever. That's a big difference. It's a huge
difference in how you're looking at how you perceive it. And I mean, it is understandable that there would be some personal, you know, agenda with the Misha fight. There's a history there. But You can take that as far as it goes and then leave it where it's not needed anymore. Same with the Bechkaheir fight. With the Holly fight, it's a little different. She kind of created that animosity out of nowhere. But that was just different emotions not being dealt with in the build-up, whether that's the fear of what Holly brought. But all these things can be managed and dealt with so that you perform to your optimum. That's all you'd ever want to go and do.
And so in the how of managing those things, you're working with a fighter, say, or somebody is identifies, hey, I fly off the handle a lot. What is the process of getting better at raising your EQ? What are some of the things we do?
It's not even so bad to fly off the handle a lot. It's just how much of that impact and after and what's the knock-on effects of all of that kind of stuff. But the first big step is that self-awareness, understanding the emotions you're feeling, what led you to feel that way, what your response is, and where you can kind of step in there. And how that involves looking at the response or looking at the emotion, looking at the thoughts. Is there a different way of looking at this? Mm-hmm. You know, did I just jump to the worst case scenario straight away, or is there a different way of looking at it?
Now, to be self-aware enough to ask, to identify as if you're watching yourself and making notes, to be able – the mindfulness, whatever you want to call it – to be able to identify your emotional reactions and how you use them, that is what we're calling self-awareness. How do we get to that point? We can say to ourselves, I just want to pay attention a little more to myself. And that's something. But is there – I know meditation does help you with some awareness of what you're thinking. Oh, that's surprising that my brain does that when I quiet it down. But what are some other things
you can do? Yeah, so I do things like little exercises with fighters where I remember one fighter in particular used to get really frustrated in training. If they got submitted or if they didn't have a good round even in a sparring session, they get really frustrated, throw the gloves off to the corner to sulk.
A couple swear words.
Yeah, and you know, sit, ready to retire.
I can't do this.
Yeah, and but then we go back and we talk about, okay, what happened there? Where's that frustration coming from? So we identify the kind of the trigger that's causing it, and then we explore what was a different way you could have looked at it. Mm-hmm. And it's not me putting the words in the mouth. They're going to come up with what's a different way of looking at these things. What's a fairer way of looking at it? What's a better way of addressing it? And that can involve going forward to having like a journal where you take notes of what you're doing in training that day.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah,
you take the notes of the training. You take the lessons from what you've done after the session, like at that night. So that leaves you free during the session to just be in the session a lot more. Too many fighters during sparring sessions are analyzing how they're doing while they're doing it. Because they feel like they need to take the confidence to know, they want to know they're doing well while it's happening. And they know they're not doing well when it's not going well. But that's useless information right now. You're taking yourself out of the moment. So you want to be in the present moment as much as you can. But knowing that you're going to review it later helps you stay present now. If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. It does. We're going to deal with the what's going on later when we look at this. Philosophical meditation. Have you heard this term?
Yeah.
That which some people use as the 20 minutes before bed, where one will ask themselves questions about them and dig into it. So it's a valuable and useful thing if you choose to do it.
I wanted a bit more practical than that, even with the fighter, though. It's just what they did. You know, how did they did lessons to take? What did they do well? Just get that stuff down, written down into a journal. You know, knowing that you're going to do that, there's so many benefits to it in terms of just learning details and techniques and everything else, as well as the emotional kind of management of it.
The idea that it frees you from thinking about it too much now is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
That understanding that I'm going to deal with the third person perspective of what I'm doing right now later. So now I can do now.
Yeah.
Now that's a really interesting.
Because too many fighters are in the previous round in this current round.
Right.
Even in sparring,
they're
still thinking about that takedown they gave up, or they're still thinking about that armbar they got submitted with and the mistake they made, and they're pissed off about it, they're frustrated about it, and they're questioning themselves and their confidence is low, and they're not here now in this round. That's not. Then it's going to cause another spiral. This round's not going to be good either if you're not here, and it's just going to have a knock-on effect. You're going to have a bad day then instead of just having one mistake in a round.
Have you ever come across when measuring? So one thing that I know you want fighters to do is keep score, not of wins and losses and rounds, but how have I improved? Measure where you are. Have benchmarks so you can trace your improvement. Have you ever come across the idea between the difference between lag measures and lead measures? A lag measure is something that's already happened that we are measuring. So this thing goes up, and we get 10,000 YouTube hits. 10,000 people watch this on YouTube. That's a lag measure. After the thing happened, something was – we saw a score. You fought 10 times, you won 8, and you lost 2. That's a lag measure. Mm-hmm. Lead measures are something that we can lay out strategically to do and keep score of that. So you're going to do, you know, 100 armbar drill. You need your armbar better? We're going to do 100 armbar drills 3 days a week. That's a lead measure. If we stay up to that measure, we have said, if we do this, we will get better. We measure the lead measure. Have you heard of that idea?
Yeah, of course. I do it all the time with the lads.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
Whether you call them lead or lag, or it's irrelevant. But it's something sort of that I stumbled upon that makes so much more sense than figuring out, you know, well, how much money did I make? Oh, well, you know, that happened. Or how many whatever did I do? What can I do now that I can measure and stay up to the measurement with the goal of improving?
Yeah. It's crucial to have those, like, breaking them down even to not just measuring what you did, but having the process goals in the first place to go and do it. Mm-hmm. And then you review week on week and see, like, the work, the output this week compared to last week, and having certain specific things that you want to get done. Like, I'm always asking, like, what's your week look like this week coming up? And getting an idea of what they're doing. So they have it mapped out in their head too of what the expectations are, what the goals are for the current week. And then drilling into specifics like that, even down to drilling and physically doing it. And we'll have visual drills as well. So you do that armbar 100 times, you're mentally visualizing as well, like not 100 times, but maybe 10 times. Yeah. You're doing visual reps of it just to lock in that technique with visualization as well.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I know we've meandered from the Rhonda stuff that we talked about, but that's sometimes fun.
There's one thing I want to go back to on the Rhonda stuff, mm-hmm. because people have this idea of that's just the way you are.
Right.
That's just the way she is. She's had a tough upbringing. She's got a lot of history. That's just the way she is. But nobody is just the way you are.
Right.
Nobody is. And
there's no such thing.
You can improve, and you, even with the emotional reactions, you can improve, obviously.
Or get worse.
Yeah.
People get worse all the time.
Of course. Yeah.
But if you're actively seeking improvement, you can actively find improvement.
So what I wanted to show is Michael Bisping. As an example, because now he's addressed it himself, that he's more conscious of managing his emotions and not carrying some of this anger and this personal kind of animosity into the fights. This is the Jorge Rivera fight.
Yeah.
Way back.
Yeah. And he was mad.
No, he's in this. The build up to this was, you know, intense, and there was a lot of stuff said back and forth. Michael has carried all of that into the cage with him. He really has.
And Mike's an intense cat.
Yeah. And he still is now, but it's a little bit different nowadays. But this is in the second round.
Like, you could have lost
maybe
the fight.
The first round.
You
could have
lost the fight. Like, he should have lost the fight there. He did that because he was mad. You're right.
He should have been disqualified. He got a point taken off, but he should have been disqualified. That was an intentional foul.
Yeah. And, you know, if the... This is the end of the round.
Yeah, I think it might have been the first round. It's the end of the round. And he's talking shit. Did you like that? And this is the finish. He gets the finish the next round. Rivera continued on even after that knee.
And he didn't need to.
Not necessarily. So the finish comes. And what's going to be interesting is when you see the finish, watch what happens with Bisping after the finish. So He's excited, but he's still carrying some of the emotion. And it gets even more obvious as he goes back to Rivera.
Yeah.
Because he's still carrying all of that stuff in with him.
Yeah.
And he still has it now.
This is the generation of why some people hated Mike Bisping. They think this is still him. Yeah. And the ref's like, because you can still be disqualified or you can be fined or you know. And he's trying to say, you know, I'm sorry. Like, no.
Yeah, he's not having it. He wants him to apologize and he's carried all that stuff. But if he has it straight after the fight, he had it during the fight.
That's right.
And he had it all the way through the camp and everything like that. And
he finally kind of goes over and tries to...
Yeah.
But you see, he's not enjoying any of this. You just had this great victory.
Now he's able to
He's able
to let go.
But he's still angry. What we didn't see, I don't think it was ever on camera, but he spit on the corner. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, he spit on his... So when he's jawing at Jorge's corner guys, and he spit on them too, which I don't know if he was fined, but... So the reason I'm bringing up... Lost the fight, fined. These would be consequences that he would not if you told him, you will lose the fight, you'll lose money, whatever, unless you can get your emotions together, that would have been something he'd be like, no, I'm not going to just lose control and lose a bunch of money or be disqualified in a fight. But he went in like that.
He should have been disqualified.
He should have.
100%
he lost
should
that
have been
fight
disqualified.
If he gets disqualified.
Yeah, and that's his own fault for carrying that stuff in. You know, like, again, a lot was said, and he was asking him to apologize for, you know, talking about his family and all this kind of stuff. I don't care come fight time. You don't get to carry that in. This is an athletic competition now. And I know it's a fight, and I know fighters will, you know, they hang on to things like that a lot more, because it is tough to compare fighting to other sports because it's fighting.
Well, so somebody now, I'm trying to think of what we might be missing in this conversation to get to what we're trying to get to. And I think a person might look at that and go, well, he won and he beat the crap out of him and he showed him. And that's true. He did all those things. But imagine if you said a bunch of things about my family that made me so angry that I lost or got myself knocked out or got myself injured. My loss would have been as a direct result of losing control.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that you sort of lost control and it may have made you win doesn't mean that you should lose control.
No.
You know,
it doesn't matter how it almost doesn't matter how personal it gets. Come fight time, it's performance time.
Yeah.
You know, and that gets hard for some fighters to manage because it is a fight. You know, it's not like they're going out there to play football.
Right.
I was watching you won't have watched this because you don't watch football, but
no.
Odell Beckham and Josh Norman were going back and forth all the time, and the game was like that. Yeah. They were just jawing back and forth. But that's all they could do, just push and jaw. They weren't fighting.
Did they perform worse? Probably.
Yeah, both of them did. Yeah. See? Both of them did.
So, you know, my wife is in musical theater.
Yeah.
If somebody or something had, through saying something about her family or whatever, made her perform that night, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Made her perform badly. She goes out and she screws up the words, or she doesn't go to the right place, or she's in the back and she's angry, or she knocks over a set piece. It's the same thing. You're performing, and you allowed emotion to damage your ability to perform.
Yeah, that's on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's on you. That's on Bisping there for that knee. And the ref would have been right in his... You know, he was completely justified to disqualify him there. But Michael, as an example, has looked at that and his self-awareness has been like, hang on, I don't need to carry some of this stuff in with me. He's talked about it openly.
He talked to me about it openly twice on Double Enders here at Fight Network. He talked openly about it. He thought that emotion was something he needed to fight, to perform. And he said over time he discovered that he performed well despite it, not because of it.
Yes.
That he was capable of performing well even with it. Once he removed it, he found he was a much, much better fighter. And he's the middleweight champion of the world, and he beat Anderson Silva. And nobody thinks he can beat Yoel Romero, but he can beat Yoel Romero.
He can. Nobody thought he could beat Luke Rockhold
exactly.
either.
Nobody thought he could beat Luke Rockhold. But now he is performing properly. But he was a great athlete, and he grew up familiarizing himself with emotion and intensity, so maybe it was a little less out of control to him. It was something, there was a homey feeling.
He associated those feelings with competing and considered them useful. But as he explored it a little bit more, as he got a little bit more experience and looked about it, maybe saw other people performing without that stuff. He
pursued sports psychology.
Yeah, he did. And he's improved now.
Yeah.
You know,
he
manages that stuff better.
World.
He's still intense.
Yeah,
and he's still got that wild side to him. Yeah. But he's much more in performance mode than fight mode. Come fight time.
I'm a huge Mike Bisping fan. Yeah. And that was a really good example. And you see it after. It's undeniable. If you are that angry after, you were that angry during.
Yeah.
You weren't free and performed free, and now that I'm done, instead of celebrating my victory, I'm going to turn on angry.
Yeah.
You were angry throughout. Yeah, yeah, that's
but
true.
But and as Ronda has showed in the Zingano fight, the Davis fight, and the McMahon fight, she still had the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't
it must be there.
Again, you associate anger with being intense, but you can be intense without the anger.
Yeah. So we go back to Connor. He's the modern, you know, high level fighter, but also there is always mental stuff with it. He made Poirier angry.
Yeah.
He made Aldo angry.
Very.
He didn't make Diaz angry. He didn't make Eddie angry. He made Brandao angry, you know, and that failed those guys.
Yeah.
You know, it failed them.
They carried that in with them.
And some of them, more than a few of them talked about it after. You know, Poirier in particular, because he's a very smart guy, he identified that experience allowed him to understand more about his own mentality and his own emotion. Yeah, very interesting. Very
but interesting. just because it feels personal in the build-up does not mean it needs to be on the night in the performance. Mm-hmm. You can be delighted afterwards that you just beat that guy. Mm-hmm. Of course, you will be. But during the performance, you need to be able to separate that stuff and leave all the personal animosity and the grudge match feel behind it. It's not going to serve you any good. And that's you can't just turn that off. You have to have planned for that in the build-up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned, I think we have 10 minutes left. And we liked going very long, but this podcast booth is used by a lot of people, so we have some structure. But I mentioned Demetrius Johnson, who coming up, maybe by the time you watch this, it's already happened, but he's fighting somebody who won a reality show that used to be in the UFC and is no longer in the UFC, and a lower level opponent in some ways than any that he had fought over the last while. That's a different type of pressure or a different type of stress.
Yeah, I mean, he would have known a while ago who he's facing, you know? Like, people are finding out last night.
Yeah, so at the time we're shooting this, it's airing basically right now.
Yeah.
And Tim Elliott won the show, if you haven't seen it. I mean, what is today? Today is Wednesday,
so as we tape this. It airs tonight.
It airs Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And you're seeing this at earliest late Wednesday night, or probably Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Anyways, spoiler alert.
Yeah, Chase, can you put spoiler alert flashing on the screen before we talk?
Tim Elliott, which many people knew for weeks and weeks and weeks. Josh Gross, who is not afraid to be on the UFC shit list, broke this like at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And then some TV guides had listed as of last week Demetrius Johnson versus Tim Elliott on TV guides. Yeah. So anyways, people knew. So he knew a month ago or whenever, 2 months ago, whenever the show was filmed. But regardless of who it is, he is facing somebody who wasn't even in the UFC and isn't a top 10 flyweight.
Yeah.
That is a different assignment for him.
Very much so.
Than fighting Joseph Benavidez.
Yeah, or even Henry Cejudo when he fought him.
Undefeated,
because he was an up-and-coming challenge, and there was that feel that this was a real challenger. Mm-hmm. This is different now.
Yeah.
You know, this is, everyone's been talking about it. It's a reality TV show, and it's a TV show to get a winner. And it's different to the Matt Serra thing years ago. This is a different thing completely, because these guys, you know, they're coming in and nobody's even heard of most of these guys before.
Like, now, Tim Elliott was in the UFC, so people are familiar with him.
Yeah, but unless you're a UFC, unless you're an MMA fan, you only know him maybe.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right.
UFC fans only know that guy, and most of them wouldn't even know him.
Yeah,
And he got cut.
Yeah,
when he was in the UFC. Yeah. So for Demetrius and his challenger on this one, he can't let himself and his standards, like, just because 80% of them will be enough to get it done, and I'm thinking, why would you bring anything less than 100% of yourself? So he should be aiming for an improved performance this time. Now, that's easy. That sounds nice, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of real mental battle in the build-up to get yourself in that place to be able to go in and perform, regardless of what the challenge is. And that's something he'll need to have addressed, because a good example maybe recently is Tony Ferguson against Lando, where Tony said afterwards that he felt like Lando didn't bring that edge out of him. He was almost blaming Lando for that.
That's
on you.
that's
on Tony. That's completely on him. He got himself very up for the Dos Anjos fight because that was a real threat, a real challenge there. Maybe not so much for Vanata, because
he wasn't even in the UFC.
It's a late replacement. It was supposed to be Chiesa, and he would have been up for that. Then it's some guy who comes in and
I think may have been a 55er originally. I'm not sure.
Vanata, like 45er. Yeah, he had a few fights at 55, but Tony allowed his standards to slip. Mm-hmm. He still won, but he said in post himself that he didn't have that same edge, that same meanness, that same sharpness that he would normally have, that you would associate with Tony Ferguson. So he allowed the opponent to dictate his level, and that's what I would be talking about with fighters in these kind of situations, are you going to allow him to dictate your mindset?
Right.
You know, that's on you. That's something you get to control. So Demetrius is in that same spot right now, where there's this. It can feel like a lose-lose.
Right.
If you beat the guy, you're expected to. What's the big deal?
Right.
Who cares? You can't allow yourself.
In a lose-lose is way worse.
It's way worse. But we don't want to focus on the negative side of
right.
that. We want to lose-lose is not correct, actually.
Yeah.
You've got to have a spectacular performance. And it'll still be true regardless of who the opponent is. That's on Demetrius to and his team to get himself into that frame of mind.
A last thing that that popped up. So Cub Swanson is a one of my very, very favorite fighters. I was showing you a piece of the breakdown that I'm working on.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Now.
When is that going to be done?
I think I'm shooting it Friday.
Okay, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's coming along really good. And Du Ho Choi is somebody I've been watching. So Cub Swanson and Du Ho Choi are fighting in Toronto on the 10th. So I sent Swanson, knows I'm a huge fan of his work, and he's said he's a fan of my work about his work, and we've chatted a few times. And I sent him a message saying that would you consider, you know, and we get along pretty good, and I said, would you consider when you're in Toronto on the Wednesday morning, we'll send a car for you, we'll have you here in 10 minutes. Here's a link, and I sent him a link to what I did with Joanna Jędrzejczyk and what I did to with Anthony Johnson. Would you come in and do one of these with me? You'll be in here for 30 minutes. We'll have you back in your hotel in an hour. And he wrote back. He said, I would do that for you any day, but fight week is my time, and I just can't do it for you. And I just loved that mindset.
You have to respect that.
Oh, that it's just so right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's so right. Like, because the idea, that week is your week.
Yeah.
That time is your time. Like, and I know he wants to do one of these. I know he would like to do that. He likes the work that, it's a cool thing when somebody spends all their time showing your skills. But to say there is no way I do things like that on fight week and stand firm on that, I think is a very cool thing.
Yeah, and it shows a level of control over. Mm-hmm. And every fighter should have that feeling going into fight week as this is my week, I get to do it now, you know.
Yeah.
There'll be obligations,
yes,
media obligations, and you don't have a choice there. If you want to get paid, you'll have to do those things. If you want to get paid long term.
Yeah, right. And you want to get bigger and those are – or even just you're expected. You'll be fined if you don't do
that. That's what I mean.
Things.
Like, I see fines as not getting paid.
Yeah, know? Right. That is a form
of money and someone took it off.
Yeah.
So you got – there's obligations. But everything else, it's on your watch. You need to be in charge of it. And you need to know what you need to be doing to get yourself and get yourself in the right frame of mind and enjoying this week and getting the most out of it. So – you know, that's one of the ways I like to look at fight week and fight night is you get to go and do this now.
Yeah.
You know, you've the work is done.
Yeah,
and reminding of
vacation
the reminding of
tonight.
The work and the preparation and the hard hours that have been put in. Now you get to go do it. This is the thing that you've been building up to. Now let's go.
Finally, you get to. So I admire very much that mindset from a fighter I already incredibly admire, but. My personal feeling is that makes a lot of sense. That's the way I'd like to look at it. But there are other fighters who, in separate their week or their time or their what makes them feel good, may be seeing movies all week.
Oh yeah.
Or it may be, you know, Skyping with their children, or like everybody is different. It's unique to. I admired this particular response, but it's unique to the individuals. I know the Sean Tompkins culture. Fight week was a celebration. So although the fighter will be going to bed a little earlier, there's a party around the whole time. And the fighter is there. They're celebrating him.
So
it's different for everybody.
Yeah, it is. But it's up to the fighter to kind of get an idea of what that is for them and being able to do it as best they can, understanding that some of these things are going to be non-controllable, especially when you're fighting away from home. So they might not have these things that you want to have and that you usually have.
You like certain food, it's just not there.
It's not available,
right.
So you got to be able to adapt, but still have as much control and be in charge in that week as possible.
And wherever you can, and this would be an instance of where you could. But it's very, very interesting. I think another last thought on that is whoever you are, you're Demetrius Johnson or you're Ronda or you're whoever, you will want your week and day to shape the way that it feels right for you. But that will change as you change.
Yeah.
At every new level you have will require a new you. And say for Rhonda and Connor and some of those people, suddenly you are doing interviews after the weigh-in itself. You are doing there is a camera following you around. You have to change as it's required.
Yeah, you have to adapt completely. And you can do a bit of preparation for that how to adapt, mm-hmm. Instead of it just all coming at you at once, and you're kind of a little bit, you feel out of your comfort zone too much, and you're not in charge of it. You can plan for that stuff, and still get your optimum.
I continue coming back to this observation, the way I'm observing things, is you can deal with the situation and also at the same time get better at the thing itself. So we'll get better at adapting to this new problem and in general improve our ability to adapt.
Yeah,
right?
That's the way it should be in everything.
Yeah, very interesting. This was fun. This was very fun.
Yeah.
But as we often say in the television and or internet business, we'll let the audience decide. that's actually something that that Glenn McDonald, one of our senior producer, he'll say, so how was the breakdown? I'm like, oh, it's really good. He goes, well, we'll let the audience judge yeah, that. And so please let us know and, you know, let us know what you think of the different things we've been adding and the stuff we've been working on and what you'd like us to talk about in the future. Next week is 206. I don't think
I'm
we are getting together, but we will definitely get together again before the end of the year show.
Yeah.
So we will. So if you got any ideas for us, just send them to us. And check out David's website, davidmullinsportpsychology.com. And it's Robin Black, MMA on Twitter, David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. And thanks so much, you guys. We really appreciate it.